Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
The Midwestern University Multispecialty Clinic in Downers Grove offers a comprehensive, patient-centered healthcare experience at their Dental Institute, Family Medicine Clinic, Speech-Language Institute, and Physical Therapy Institute, or Eye Institute, there as well. At their clinics, you'll receive exceptional care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Learn more at mwuclinics.com or call 630-743-4500. That's 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic, your family's home for healthcare. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and we thank them for that. All right, I was at the Costco, like the Jewel. I was at Costco, I think a couple of weeks ago. I was not in the market for rotisserie chicken, but I bought one because that's what you do when you're at Costco, right? Nathaniel Meyerson is on a phone line. He is a reporter for CNN Business. Nathaniel, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Good to be with you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So, well, I'm not going to say it's all about the chickens, but the chickens are a pretty big deal when it comes to Costco. Explain this for me.
Yes. So Costco has a whole big strategy behind these $4.99 rotisserie chickens. Costco puts the chickens at the back of the store, which forces customers to browse the aisles, pick up other stuff. So before you get to the chickens, you often have, you know, $100 worth of items or more in your shopping cart.
I've got more printer cartridges than I'll ever need, Nathaniel.
Exactly.
And so tell me, though, because they fight hard to keep this price at $4.99. Rotisserie chickens elsewhere are $1, $2 more. It's so important to them that they're getting into the chicken raising business themselves. Explain that for me.
That's exactly right, Steve. So Costco is doing something pretty unusual for a retailer, something you might expect, you know, more from a poultry company. Costco is building a $450 million poultry complex in Nebraska, which includes a processing plant, a hatchery, and a feed mill. And it's partnering with local farmers in Nebraska in a town called Fremont. And it's raising the chickens. It's processing them. And then they're off to stores. And Costco really thinks that it can save money by doing this and cut costs. It was also getting harder for Costco to find the right size birds that
it
needs.
I love this part of the story, Nathaniel, about the fact that, you know, we're used to eating chicken parts. And when we go to the store, we want the biggest bloated chicken breast or wings now too that we can find. So when the limited number of big chicken producers go that way, the chickens produced end up being too big for Costco's rotisseries.
That's exactly right. So Costco wants its rotisserie chickens to be around 6 pounds or 6.25 pounds. And the rest of the industry, the bird weights are trending up,
right?
So 7-8 pound birds. And that doesn't work for Costco. So it really had some supply challenges. And in Nebraska, they're going to be raising 6 and 6.25 pound chickens, which are exactly what they need for stores.
Now, these farmers that are partnering with Costco are taking a risk, right? They're not chicken farmers. They're by and large, they've been raising grains and corn. They're going to have to adapt to this. They're signing a 15-year contract to build the barns and raise the chickens, right? Are the farmers, is this a good deal for those farmers?
Well, Costco says it's a good deal for the farmers, and farmers, you know, some of these farmers think it's a good opportunity with corn prices going down, with the trade war, with the U.S. trade war with China biting them. They see, a lot of these farmers see Costco as kind of a stable industry coming in, where poultry demand is growing. It is a risk, and they are investing, you know, they're investing millions of dollars in many cases to build these barns. And, you know, farmers advocates, I've spoken to some farmers advocates who think that the contracts are a little exploitative and unfair to the growers. So I think it's going to be really interesting to watch that play out in Nebraska. There has been in Fremont a real backlash to Costco coming. You have environmentalists that are very concerned about the impact of the plant and the barns in the area. Now, the governor of Nebraska, Pete Ricketts, has supported bringing in Costco, and Costco has also kind of earned support from the business community, which sees this as a way to, you know, bring in revenue.
Nathaniel, I don't have it in front of me, but did I read correctly that the chickens we eat are only 42 days old?
Yes. Well, it's easier now than ever to raise chickens, and they require less, and it's cheaper for the producers because they require less feed than, you know, raising cattle.
Okay, so we've got that, and so I am spending, I think, what, $100, $120 a year in order to save a dollar on a rotisserie chicken every time I go to the store. That's quite a model for Costco, right? They make almost, well, they make most of their money on their subscription fees.
Yeah, subscription fees are really, you know, the way they drive profit. It's Costco is has been one of the most successful retailers in the, you know, so-called retail apocalypse time, right, and the Amazon era. But Costco, you know, I was just looking at Costco stock price today. This year it's up 45-46%, which is higher than Amazon stock. So investors really, you know, they see the continued growth in the memberships, the continued growth in sales. Costco, I think, has been able to defy kind of the conventional thinking around brick and mortar retail because it really gives customers a reason to go into stores. You go for the chicken, you go for the Kirkland signature private label, fill up your gas tank.
Nathaniel, I go for that little tiny cup of granola samples. Really, that's what brings me in every Saturday.
Exactly. You know, people with Amazon, retailers need to give customers a reason to come into stores. And Costco, you know, has some of the most loyal customers in the country. And, you know, this chicken operation is yet another example of a retailer kind of bucking kind of traditional thinking and doing its thing in an unusual way.
Nathaniel Meyerson writes about it at CNN.com. Nathaniel, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Thanks very much, Jordan Bernfield. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, so remember last week we were talking about the influence of China and what the influence it has on U.S. companies. It's a big with the NBA now, of course. We'd mentioned Tiffany as well. And then we talked about the influence on Hollywood. Well, did you see the story yesterday that the movie Abominable, the Disney movie, has been pulled from the screens in Vietnam? And that's because the map in the movie includes China's so-called Nine Dash Line that dips far down into the South China Sea into areas that are claimed by Vietnam and other countries. In other words, the map on this movie was not the internationally recognized map. It was the Chinese map. And because of that, it was pulled from screens in Vietnam. Was it put in there so that it could get onto screens in China? That's something we'll have to find out. But clearly a story that we'll continue to watch over the next few years as China flexes its muscle over U.S. companies. Okay, none of that now. We are on a phone line with Edward McClellan. He is an author and reporter. We've seen his work in the New York Times, the L.A. Times, and Chicago Magazine. And apparently, Edward wants to ditch Lakeshore Drive. Is that correct?
Well, I'm wondering whether we can afford to keep it. As the lake level is rising as a result of climate change, it's undermining Lakeshore Drive. You know, Alderman Hopkins, who represents the Gold Coast, was talking about how The water is appearing in places he's never seen it before. It's undermining the foundations of the drive, and they're talking about an expensive project to rebuild it. I wonder if we rebuild it, is the lake just going to keep coming? Are we going to have to keep rebuilding it?
I think it's one of those things where, you know, when there's a big storm and it comes up in the news, people hear about it, but unless you're driving up and down the drive all the day, you don't really, or every day, you don't really consider just how far up Lake Michigan has come.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I wrote another piece about some of the beaches on East Lake Terrace, where I used to live in Rogers Park. And one of the beaches, Juneway Beach, it's completely disappeared. There's nothing left. And on another beach, Rogers Avenue Beach, the break wall is collapsing. And I know it was like last week or a week and a half ago, Lakeshore Drive was just closed for a couple hours because of flooding.
Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm all in on climate change. I understand. I'm completely on board with that. But I also remember, you know, that the lakes have gone up and down over from year to year. I mean, what makes you certain that this is not going to recede in a year or two?
Well, it could recede. What they're saying is that it's going to be more extreme. It's the lows are going to be lower and the highs are going to be higher. So we're just going to have to deal with the lake. We may have to decide, are we going to wall ourselves off from the lake, or are we going to work with it and retreat from the lake? I mean, I suppose an option is to build a giant wall to protect Lakeshore Drive from the lake, but then if you wall yourself off from the lake, what's the point of even being in Chicago in the first place?
I mean, it's borrowed land anyway, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, a lot of it was built, the lake, you know, there's a marker in Lincoln Park west of Lakeshore Drive that shows where the original shoreline was. And so a lot of it was built out, some of it was built out by rubble from the Great Chicago Fire in 1871. So it's maybe just a case of the lake trying to take back what we took from it in the first place.
Okay,
you know, there's a saying that nature always bats last.
I think that's true. Alderman Hopkins wants to rebuild it. I think you quoted an architect or someone else who talked about they're looking at a permeable Lakeshore Drive. What does that mean?
Well, that came up in a story that we did in Chicago Magazine about how Chicago will deal with climate change. So that means the water is just, you know, instead of flooding it, it percolates through. So, I mean, that's a possible solution. A raised highway might be a solution. A tunnel might be a solution. Or we could decide that we're not going to let people drive up and down the lakefront and grass it over. I know that's probably the most extreme solution.
Yeah, Ed, that's not going to happen, is it, Edward? I mean, could we live without Lakeshore Drive?
I doubt it. I mean, the only way it would happen is if this just becomes an untenable situation and it's just impossible to preserve a highway right along the lakefront. I mean, obviously, it's become an established part of the Chicago transportation system, people's routines. But, you know, as they've seen in other places, if you take a highway away, there are 160,000 auto trips on Lakeshore Drive every day. If you take a highway away, there doesn't necessarily mean there's still going to be 160,000 trips. People will find other ways to get where they're going. Maybe you can use some of the money to invest in public transportation.
I know one of the ideas was to make it a bus-only thoroughfare as well, and that would certainly allow you to zoom up and down on Lakeshore Drive much more quickly than you can these days.
Exactly. Yeah, I take the 147 bus all the time, so that gets me downtown quickly. But I could also take the Red Line.
Edward McClellan writes about it at chicagomag.com, and the lesson that he leaves us with is the fact that nature always bats last.
That's right.
I'm not going to sleep as well tonight,
Edward. The lake is going to win.
Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Amy Guth is in the studio. She's the host of The Daily Gist, the podcast from Crane Chicago Business, and comes by most days to give us what's what.
I'm here with the what's what.
I'm really shocked by these numbers. Lynn Merrick writes a story about the drop in population enrollment in Illinois' public institutions of colleges. So Illinois State is up from 2015, up 0.3%. Illinois Champaign up 11%. UIC up 15%. Chicago State down 37%. Okay, we knew that his school had big problems anyway. Southern Illinois down 32%. Western 31%. Northeastern Illinois in Chicago down 25%. All of this happening while, are we spending more on state education?
We are, because while enrollment is down, the cost of operating them is up, because facilities need to be maintained, because there's, you know, in a moment in which, okay, dollars only go so far, families are looking more at, okay, where is the school I really, really want to go? So
right.
Schools are having to spend money on recruiting and making the facilities nice and doing all this stuff to
get kids
interested.
They spend a lot of money luring kids in to get them to go to the school, but maybe not as much money on actually teaching them once they're there.
Right. So, I mean, financial aid is part of that equation that they do spend on that, but it's really about recruiting and facilities, and we see that playing out in interesting ways.
So if you're SIU, there just aren't as many Salukis around. What do you do?
I know. There's fewer Salukis.
Which
isn't
always a bad thing. There's one coming up after this, yeah.
Well, it's interesting to see how schools are adjusting to that, right? So we see, we see some big updates happening to try to lure more students. We see UIUC, they shifted to an entirely online MBA program. Schools
right.
are making them more affordable by, okay, we'll lower costs by having part of it online. We're seeing things like that. UIC recently, this is kind of a weird one, but they made a dormitory that includes classroom space. They're just trying to do a lot of different stuff to save money. There's a couple of interesting details in this story that I really liked. One of them is, of the 50 states, Illinois public universities rely more heavily on state funding than all but Alaska and Hawaii.
Really?
Isn't that interesting?
So what does that mean? The others, they don't have higher tuition, do they, or do they?
So they're increasingly relying on tuition.
Okay.
And then other sources like research grants, big donors, things like that. And Illinois is very non-reliant on that outside of Alaska and Hawaii, which is really
right.
interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that at all.
No. And then the other one is?
The other interesting detail is that the population demographic, there's kind of a little blip. So part of this has to do with there were just fewer high school students a few years ago. So there's fewer college students.
And this is a temporary sort of aberration?
Yeah, it seems that way. Although there's kind of this rising, feeling, this sentiment of, is college worth it anymore? Because I think Generation Z, which is right behind the millennial generation, saw millennials struggle.
Well, but the other way to look at that is that maybe colleges like Western or Eastern are more worth it because
That's right.
they're not as expensive. You're not paying through the nose.
Right. I mean, this is a really interesting equation. And Lynn Merrick is so good at those really complex balls of yarn kind
right.
of stories and unraveling them and smoothing them all out. And so this is a really interesting one. And she did a really interesting job with it. There's also a lot of data embedded in this story. You can go there and see, go to Crane's Chicago Business and see all these cool charts that she used to power this.
ChicagoBusiness.com. The name of the podcast is The Daily Gist. You should subscribe. And it will drop about an hour or so.
That's
Thanks
right.
for coming by.
Absolutely.